The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 507, recorded on July 9th.
Welcome to the 507th edition of the TV Gaming Podcast and the 340th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Spectre.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So last week we did an episode, but it was too short and too boring, so I decided not to bother. Besides which, there was too much going on that week with July 4th, and it had nothing to do with the holiday. I actually had other stuff. So, what have you been playing, Scott, as if we didn't know?
Yeah, I've been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild and enjoying it immensely. It's a huge world and lots to explore and over 120 shrines to collect all the spirit orbs from. So there's a lot to do.
I don't like collectathons, to tell you the truth.
Well, I mean, it's not just collecting them. You're collecting them to get the hearts so that way you have more life and you can take more damage, so it's I'm leveling up, I guess you could say.
I will say it's better than having to make all those settlements in Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like the orbs in Zelda or Breath of the Wild, they aren't really so much collectathon style. Like they're not like get the puzzle pieces in Banjo-Kazooie or get the whatever it was in Yooka-Laylee. I don't care to remember. They're more like you actually like solve a unique puzzle based around a very specific challenge.
You know what? No orbs can be better than the ones that are found in Crackdown.
That's true. These ones aren't that good. If only they allowed Link to just like jump 50 feet in the air.
You need
and
that
make craters
in Zelda.
The
you need the ability to just keep on increasing your agility and have that little sound every time an orb is picked up.
You do get the ability to jump 50 feet in the air when you get Revolvi's little air thing. And he shoots you up in the air. So there
Scott,
is that.
Did you ever play Crackdown?
Huh?
Did you ever play Crackdown?
Never heard of it.
You've never heard of Crackdown?
Nope.
Well, there's two Crackdowns, actually. There was the arcade game, which is basically a side-scrolling shoot-em-up. But there's also Crackdown, which is basically the Incredible Hulk. But you start out as a beast, but then you keep on getting more and more powerful. You start off by picking up cars and throwing them. You end up being able to pick up tens of cars and just hurling them all over. You become super strong, super fast, and all this stuff. A lot of people just like to pile up cars and then just see if they can make the biggest explosion possible.
Mm.
So, and then the sequel ruined everything. By the way, a little interesting note. Do you know why Crackdown 3 took so long? It revealed that what they had come up with sucked, so they started over.
Yeah, because their whole spiel from the get-go was entirely destructible world, and I can see how, like, you figure out real quick what breaks and what doesn't. And, like, and not just, like, the world, but, like,
well,
what breaks that's not
it's
supposed
just that
to
wasn't
break.
Fun. See, that's the main point of playing a video game, is to have fun.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's definition of fun is different, though.
Yeah, well, it does. Yeah, I mean, I'm not. See, when you were 15, it was more like video work. And you felt obsessively had to do it because you didn't have any other free time, so you might as well do the video game. I know a lot of people like spreadsheet games, by spreadsheet games, you know what I'm talking about. Those games in which there's so much micromanaging. A lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but some people find that fun. Other people don't.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying Crackdown 3 wasn't fun. So they said, scrap it. We're going to make something fun. Actually, I don't know if you were around with Apolladin, but, Sid Meier had a dinosaur game, right? And
yeah,
he scrapped it because it wasn't fun. And he says that there are a lot of games that he starts but decides not to do because they end up not being fun.
Yeah.
Which is probably why Scalebound was canceled, because they were figuring out, it's not fun. Which is why this year at E3, notice the same guy was working on Scalebound announced another game for Microsoft. So it's sort of like, yeah, Scalebound wasn't working. Let's try something new.
Yeah, I also like in the Breath of the Wild how you can, you're affecting your world. There's lots of little stories that happen within the bigger story. And, like, for example, there's this shrine quest where you're helping these little bird children do a recital. And when you get them to do the music, you discover where a shrine is. And also, you, like I said, you help bring them together and do their sisters, and they're trying to do recital, and you have to get the one of them a certain dish to eat, and then she's happy, and then they all go and do the little recital thing, and then later on you see them on the platform near their village, and they're playing their recital like perfectly, you know, and it's just like you help to do that, and then you can even help build a town in another location, and it's just, it's really cool to see you affecting the world and making it a better place, I guess.
You know, I should mention Dying Light 2. I don't know if we discussed it last week or whenever, but that's a game in which Chris Avellan is involved, and now it has these little things in which your decisions affect the rest of the world, you know. Mm. And this is a parkour zombie game, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting to see how people do the, your actions affect the world.
That's true.
So, TJ, what have you been doing?
I honestly wish it was tomorrow, because I'm about to start playing something new, but it hasn't come out yet.
What are you under embargo? You can't say what it is?
Oh, no, it's Shining Refrain, or it's Shining Resonance Refrain. Which will be, it's a JRPG from Sega, and it's a long running series going back to Shining Force on the Sega Genesis, and even before that. And the reason why I decided to jump into this is because that's the series that kind of got me into strategy games and JRPGs and fantasy fiction way when I was a little kid. So I saw this come in, and it's supposed to be decent, and I thought it came out on the PS3, and this is supposed to be the re-release of it.
Wait,
in the
what
West.
What platform is this on?
This is going to be on PS4 now. And I thought, well, I haven't, like, there have been some bad Shining games of the year over the years. This one was supposed to be good, so I thought, I haven't jumped into a Shining game in decades. So I
play Jack Torrance.
I play Shining Force
bat?
1 and...
No, actually not a baseball bat. That's Wendy. No, you have an axe.
Wait, what?
I was asking if you're going to be playing Jack Torrance, you know, with his axe.
Oh, no. I don't know.
And then you're smashing open the bathroom saying, "Here's Johnny."
Not quite.
Do you have the halls filling with blood with the two creepy girls?
Come play with us. Forever and ever. I see it. I see where you went with this now.
it's a long way to do a joke, and you don't even understand the reference right off the bat.
I know, it took me a second. I blanked. I blew it. But it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the series holds up nowadays compared to where it was when I was playing when I was a kid. Because I still go back to Shining Force 1 and 2 regularly and play those games over and over again. I think they're some of my favorite turn-based strategy games of all time. But we'll see how it goes. I have no idea how it's going to play. I haven't really spoiled myself on anything, so I'm just going to go in blind and hope for the best.
And what fighting game are you playing now?
Oh, yeah. I've still been chipping away at BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle. I broke into Master Tier, which is there's Bronze Tier, Silver Tier, and these go from, like, Bronze 5 all the way up to Bronze 1, so I went past Silver Tier, Gold Tier, Platinum Tier, Diamond Tier, and finally, Master Tier.
Nice.
I think there's a couple more after that, but for right now, I'm feeling pretty strong. Like, I actually took the game to a competition. I took my game to a competition recently in San Antonio, and played against other good players, and just check to see how I would do. And I, like, if y'all don't know fighting games, there's a tier list thing where people like to put characters in rank as to which characters play best and have more opportunities and are easier to play with compared to characters that are hard to play and not used as much and just are considered to be harder to work with if you're going to go up against somebody that like uses an easy character. I play characters that are generally not seen very often. Trick characters, gimmick characters. I like playing characters that nobody uses because I like to make them look good and do crazy things with them.
Okay. I didn't play much. I'm still playing XCOM 2. I'm near the end of it. And, you know, I was looking and I have almost 400 hours in it. Mm. So I've been playing a lot of that. Not much else. I did watch Batman Ninja, and I wanted to like it, but eh.
Not a fan? What did you not like about it?
I mean, I don't know what, clearly what's wrong with it. It's just like, I guess the melding of Batman with the Sudoku Jedi just doesn't work for me. It just felt, what's the word I'm looking for? Stupid. I think that was basically the problem I had with the movie. It was stupid. I mean, there's just so much, you know, I mean, yeah, I can take whimsical, I can take fun, but it just was too stupid.
I saw a screenshot recently where Bruce Wayne is walking around, quote unquote, in disguise as a friar with a bat symbol shaved into his head. And
well, he's not in disguise in that world because there is no Bruce Wayne.
Right, but it was just kind of, I guess, it was almost 60s Adam West corny on the nose.
Well, there's a lot of monkeys in it.
I once saw a fan art of somebody making a medieval Batman, like in a suit of armor.
Oh, they
have
that already. I mean, there's every single kind of Batman you can find. Yeah. Batman by Gaslight, or, you know. But, yeah, so it was just, you know, I don't know what I'm getting next, actually. I just returned the movie. I'm hoping I get something that isn't like Stardew Valley, in which it's going to force me to spend all my time with it, you know.
What's your favorite Batman? What's your favorite animated Batman movie?
Mask of the Phantasm. I saw that in theaters, by the way. I was one of the three or four people who actually saw it in a movie theater.
That one is very good. I really like that one.
As far as my favorite Superman movie, it's hard to say. I want to say Superman vs. the Elite because it has a really kick-ass ending and everything ties up in a bow, but just watching The Authority is just depressing, and I can't watch it for very much longer. I mean, I like All-Star Superman, but they remove one scene from the comic that I really love, and that's when he's dealing with Jumper, with the suicidal teen. So it's like, you know, there's just, I mean, let's just go with Justice League Crisis on Two Earths and leave it at that. I mean, that's a fun movie, which gets silly but doesn't get stupid.
Yeah. I think if I had to pick a favorite right off the top of my head, it would probably have to be Under the Red Hood.
I like Under the Red Hood, but it's one of those movies you really can't think too hard on because then all the plot holes start popping up and start saying, wait, why, what, huh?
I really just like,
you have John DiMaggio as the Joker, which is weird. It sounds like a demented bender.
I liked John DiMaggio as the Joker, actually.
He's
I thought it
thuggish,
was like,
which is fine.
Uh-huh. But there was, it was refreshingly and surprisingly good for me when I was going through it. At first I was like, what is this? And this feels so wrong. And then, but the more I got into it, the more I really started to just like let go of the idea of Bender and just enjoy him for what he was.
He had the key Joker moment of any of the films, and that is when Batman's about to disarm the bomb. He says, "No, no, this is perfect. We all die together."
The way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, he's a death seeker, so you know. I also like the way he laughs when Batman is able to solve the situation, and he says, "You still lost." you know, he managed to shoot the. Also, you know, well, here's the thing. Dick Grayson gets the short shaft in this movie. He is such a doofus and an idiot in the film. And his entire point, I guess, is to repeat everything that's going on the screen, to be Captain Obvious, and just to be treated like shit by Batman. I know he's supposed to be the counterpart to Jason Todd, but seriously, mm-hmm. Nightwing doesn't come off well in this film.
No, not at all. I agree with that.
Actually, I just realized, no, my favorite Batman story is by far Return of the Joker, which is Batman Beyond, of course, but which has the most chilling moment of the entire film when little Tim Drake is, starts laughing after killing the Joker and then just starts sobbing.
Yeah, that was a pretty...
And that was the one time you see Batman really ready to kill the Joker. He's ready to kill the Joker. He's not holding back. He throws a knife at his head. So Batman Ninja was, it's just for... I'm going to be mean now. Nerds who just want anything that has the bat symbol on it and think anything ancient Japan is cool, you know, and think so. Well, it's automatically great, you know, and it's like, no. You know, here's the thing. I did not like I did not like the Futurama movies. And everybody loved. And I said, no, these are crap. I mean, the first one was okay. Which was Bender's Big Score.
Bender's Big Score, yeah.
I liked that one only because of the revelation of Lars, and the rest of it was eh. The other three were eh. Actually, I did like The Beast with a Billion Backs a lot more than the other films, simply because it was funnier, you know. But I saw Beyond the Green Yonder, and it sucked. And I was in an audience, right? This was at PAX East, and people were laughing hard at the unfunniest shit. And I'm thinking, are you laughing because you're supposed to? I mean, Beyond the Great Green Yonder was terrible.
Is that the D&D one?
No, that was Bender's game. No,
okay.
Beyond the Green Yonder was the last of the four films, which led into the new Futurama series. And I said, oh... Well, actually, we weren't going nowhere. We were just in the extra space lane. We're actually on the highway. We didn't go anywhere special. We just went back to Earth. By the way, that episode that followed directly after was hilarious, in which first the Planet Express crashes, and then the Nimbus just crashes right on top of them, making them all skeletons. And, you know, that was a hilarious episode. We got to do a Futurama podcast at some point.
That'd be cool, yeah.
You can talk about the best episodes. Okay, before we go into video game news, what was your favorite Futurama episode?
I think mine would be the one where he finds out his younger brother had...
No, his son, his nephew. That's the luck of the Friars.
No, you interrupted me. He thought his younger brother hated him and stole his glory, and then found out his younger brother actually loved him and missed him,
yes,
and named them after him.
That was the one surrounding the fact that he saw Philip J. Fry, the first man on Mars. It was luck of the Fryish.
Right. Yeah. And he thought that...
that was his brother. Yeah, he thought he stole his identity.
Right, but it was actually his nephew.
Right.
But that meant that there was a little bit more in that he thought his... younger brother hated him, and then realized that his younger brother actually loved and missed him. And it was amazing how Matt Groening can make these episodes so damn good and emotional. And
I could have done without Bender digging up his nephew's corpse.
Yeah.
That was the one thing. They could have just left that right out. I guess they didn't want too much treacle, but at that point, you don't want it.
I forgot that he did that, so...
Yeah. Well, you can just ignore it.
Yeah. And of course, the little dog episode, that just...
Jurassic Bark. It was okay. The thing is that Bender's Big Score removed all that, and that Seymour was always... Never had to miss Fry after all, because other Fry was with him. Oh, well. How about you, TJ? What's your favorite Futurama episode?
My favorite one? Oh, damn. I think one of the ones that easily just comes to mind is the one where they visit the internet.
Oh, that one. Yeah, all the... What's it called? They're attacked by banner ads.
Mm-hmm. And like all the little nods to all of that, because a lot of those nods still hold up right now as far as nerd culture and just like weirdos go.
Right, but that was also the one in which Leela meets Alcazar, and
yes,
they start. It basically becomes a Married with Children episode with her and Al.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of good things about that one. It's like from the spoof on the internet to also okay, and the other one would be ads. Almost any episode that includes Nixon is also good.
Well, yeah.
No, I didn't like the one with the re-election 3000.
You didn't like that one?
No, not that one. I'm talking about the one from the second series. I'm not talking about when Nixon gets elected. I'm talking about the clone candidate from 3012 episode.
Oh, I like the one where I like the one where he gets elected a lot.
Yeah, because he gets the new gigantic robot body and he got the robot vote.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would have to say my favorite episode is the late Philip J. Fry, and that's the one in which he gets in a time machine that only goes forward, and he goes with the professor and Bender, and they keep going forward through time and eventually to the end of the universe.
Yeah, I've seen that one. That was good too.
Yeah, I mean, I also liked the one in which Bender becomes super intelligent. Not only is it cute, but it's also really funny. Especially with Zoidberg going after the turkey to capture those robots. So yeah, we'll have to pick an episode to talk about, or a few, no, just one episode. Just one episode to talk about. Now you might wonder about all this padding is because, like last week, this week's pretty light. There's not much news in July in the video game industry. So we're gonna go to the first item, which was actually something we discussed last week. Fallout 76 has fast travel, and players under level 5 can't die in PvP, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. Journalists are continuing to piece together information on Bethesda's upcoming online-only Fallout 76, and in a recent interview with Multiplayer.it, which is an Italian site, Todd Howard stated the game will include fast travel, and that players under level 5 can't be killed in PvP. When asked by the interviewer if there will be fast travel in Fallout 76, he responded with a simple yes. There were no follow-up questions or elaboration, so it's not clear how fast travel will work, or how many availables it'll be available in, or if there will be restrictions, such as having to visit a clearer location of enemies in order to open it as a fast travel point, which is pointless if it's a multiplayer-only game, since there's always going to be people around. So I already speculated last week that it's just going to be, you know, certain points, which are neutral zones where there's no PvP. They can travel between points and points, and the thing is that they said that Fallout 76's world is going to be like 3 to 4 tough times bigger than Fallout 4. So, with no mounts or vehicles in Fallout 76 and a world 4 times as large as Fallout 4, this news will come as a relief to some players, especially if you wind up loaded with a loot a long way from your base. Fast travel could also be presumably used by enemy players to quickly travel closer to you, which might be an annoyance. Also in the interview, Howard stated that players under level 5 can't be killed by other players in PvP. He says this feature might change before Fallout 76 is released. Although PvP is already optional, and you don't need to fight other players if you don't want to, this sounds like it could let lower level players dip their toes into PvP without risking their lives if they bite off more than they can chew. But the question is, if you have two people under level 5 facing off, how's that gonna work if neither of them can die? Fallout 76 is due to be released in November 14th, 2018. There will be a beta period before that, although the date of the beta is currently unknown. So are you interested in Fallout Rust or Fallout DayZ or whatever, you know, because it's kind of obvious what this game is going to be. It's going to be one of those large player-populated games in which it's just you and the other players.
Yeah, I mean... I'm not going to say I don't want it. I think it'll be a unique and interesting experience. Although the idea of multiplayer, whenever it comes to a Bethesda main game like Skyrim or Fallout, always sounds like a little bit meh to me. Just because I like the idea of being able to hold the fate of my
Fallout game at all. I have to wonder if this was a Rust kind of game and Bethesda said, hey, you know what, let's put a Fallout, what's it called, paint a coat of paint on it, and more people will be interested because it says Fallout on it.
I have to wait and see what the final result is. I think the potential or the idea and intent is to create a world where you're working together to make settlements or make to recover from the fallout and not necessarily be Rust.
They did say not to play in PvP, so...
Yeah, so I guess I have to wait to see what happens. I mean, Elder Scrolls Online seems to be continuing doing well, you know, despite me not playing it. So I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who find the game fun and like it, and I think Coat of Paint is kind of being disingenuous. I mean, isn't a skin.
I have a feeling this might be free to play.
I guess
you think so?
Yeah, I mean, it's a type of game in which it would be so easy to charge for cosmetic items, and also, you know, if you want to get basic items that, you know, that are tedious to get or stuff like that, you know, this just screams to me a free-to-play game.
I really hope it's not free-to-play.
Why not?
I'd rather just pay the $60 and then I'm playing the game and no advertisements, no thing saying, oh,
it's not advertised. It's not going to be backed by advertisements. It's going to be backed by microtransactions, but
yeah, I don't
cosmetic
want to see the
microtransactions like a new hat. You know how Team Fortress 2 makes its money.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see then. I mean, I don't know. Right now, the potential, or at least intent, seems to be something different from what you're saying. So I'll have to wait and see.
TJ?
Yeah, I stand by my original statement. Like, these games are for somebody. Clearly, people play The Elder Scrolls Online, and I've seen, like, even some of my...
It's not that, because there's not going to be any monsters for you to kill. It's just going to be you and other people.
There are monsters to kill, Jonah.
Well, I'm just saying, there's not quests that are saying, kill these monsters for this.
There's going to be quests. There's just not NPCs giving you the quests. There's going to be terminals, it'll be robots or ghouls or little notes.
That's different from MVP. No. There are no NPCs, meaning there's no quest givers.
There are quests,
have you ever played something like Rust or something? It's where you have generate.
Haven't.
It's like Ark System Evolved. Is it Ark? Did I say that right? Ark System Evolved.
I mean, clearly there's an overseer. I don't know how that's going to work, but there'll be a terminal.
That's what the overseer is.
You know, go create a freaking building over there or something, you know?
Well, considering all the vaults were actually dickish experiments by the government to see how people would crack under the strain, I wouldn't count on the overseer to do anything for you. It's sort of like, yeah, this experiment was to see how people could recover from, you know, and build their own stuff and how they're going to react to each other. It'll be interesting. Here's the thing. It's definitely going to be a player economy in which everything the players do is the economy. There's no economy except for what the players create. It's just sort of like Star Wars Galaxies. A lot of people bemoan that loss because there are people who made money just by being entertainers in it, you know, and by entertaining other players.
I'm going to play semi-sort of devil's... There aren't going to be... I agree with you. It's probably going to be like Ark Survival Evolved. That's what it's looked like from the very get-go, where you just sort of... You come out of the vault, you go off and find friends, and you go and make a world and survive against it.
You have to punch trees for resources.
That said, there are going to be, like, in Survival Evolved, there are going to be monsters to fight against. There's going to be a Mothman. That's going to be a thing. There's going to be West Virginia lore and all sorts of little nods to the society there.
Well, the biggest question is, like Ark Survival Evolved? Wait, will it have, just like Ark Survival Evolved, poop?
Probably. You could dig up some radiated sloth poop.
But do you have to make poop like you do in Ark Survival Evolved?
I don't know. But I have no idea. But
that kind of game isn't complete without human feces.
But no, I don't think that there's going to be, like, I don't think that there's going to be like a true quest giver that tells you what to do and where to go next. There might be like tutorial stuff at the beginning, but I really do believe that most of the stuff you do will just be constant advancement of being able to build the next new thing because of the resources that you find for yourself. Which for a lot of Fallout fans is probably not going to be their favorite thing.
I don't know, a lot of it is making your own world. How do you make your own world? I think that's going to be the appeal.
If there's a supposed single-player option, there's got to be something. I don't know what, but there's got
to
be something.
I agree with you. There does have to be something. There has to be some kind of substance that ties you down. But then again, I mean, you can play Minecraft by yourself all day long and mm-hmm. have fun. But that's true. So I think that's kind of going to be what it's like, where you just sort of push against whatever systems are in the game and try to build up more and more. This is going to be a game for people that really liked
making the settlements.
This is going to be a game for people who really liked Fallout 4's build mode, by extension, it's going to be a game for people who like Minecraft, for people who like the building elements of Fortnite, for people who like doing these sort of open-world sandbox games, but with some Fallout elements, guns, weapons, monsters, and an environment to fight against.
Yeah, I love how they're still pushing that Minecraft stuff in Fallout. It didn't work out in Fallout 4, and I think they realized that, so they said, screw it, we're just going to make that part of the game its own game. And Fallout 5 will be free of that base-making stuff.
Hey, Jonah, before we go any further, could you check the wires near your mic again? I feel like you're catching a lot of static.
So much static.
I don't think so.
He's like, it sounds like he's outside.
It stopped just now, but before it was like tremendous.
It was like a storm.
Okay. Well, so long as it wasn't on my side.
It was coming from your end.
See?
It's still like, I don't know.
Let me try that.
There you go. That fixed whatever
that
was it
was. Mouse. I have no mouse now. Oh well. So we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Indivisible, the RPG from the creators of Skullgirls, gets a stunning anime teaser from PC Gamer. Indivisible is a 2D action RPG from Lab Zero Games, the indie studio best known for the gorgeous 2D fighting game Skullgirls. Since its announcement in 2015, Indivisible has raised over $2.2 million in crowdfunding, and now, with the backing of publisher 505 Games, is scheduled to arrive sometime in 2019. Today, Lab Zero offered a glimpse at Indivisible's world via a snippet of the game's lavish anime opening. The opening is a joint project from Titmouse, who, among other things, made a stunning animated short for Heroes of the Storm, and Studio Trigger, who handled the cutscenes in Little Witch Academia, Chamber of Time, and created the Kill la Kill anime, which is now getting its own fighting game with Arc System Works.
I was about to say, yeah, if we're going to mention a fighting game ever, you say, oh yeah, I know that game. Yeah, I'm perfectly aware of it.
Mm-hmm. The Chipper Girl featured in the opening is Indivisible's main character, Anya.
Anya.
It's A-J-N-A. That's
how you say Anya. Yeah, Anya. That's how. It's another way to say
Anya. Anya has a Y. Anya.
Well, okay. We'll just go with that. A girl who sets out on a globe-spanning journey to discover the truth behind her mysterious powers. Lab Zero offered a bit more on Anya in a recent blog post, with lead writer Brandon Sheffield saying, "She's funny, she's overly positive, she's a bit naive, tries her best to do the right thing, and is always ready to throw down." In a separate post, Lab Zero shared a bit more on Indivisible's intriguing combat. The gist is that each party member is assigned one of four buttons, so each one acts as an attack you can use to build combos. But like Skullgirls, Indivisible also features more nuanced systems like guarding, juggling, and special itty and magic attacks.
Now, let's take a pause for a moment. I know the game very well, but you might as well describe it. TJ, tell us about Skullgirls.
Skullgirls was a beautifully animated game that took on a sort of it's like
life
a
its own.
It's like if Universal Monsters and slapstick 1920s animation came together in a joint venture and made this weird sort of monstrous, weird set of characters that, like you had a girl who had a hat that had super muscular Hulk arms. You had a, you had this.
By the way, we should mention that it's cel shaded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, this, rubber band animated, like, Mary Poppins looking lady that basically lifts up her skirt and has a whole bunch of guns in there. And it's just ridiculous stuff like that. It was a beautifully animated game. It ended up being like a very well balanced game. Like people still compete in that game today. And at like its height, it was challenging Street Fighter V for how many users were online, even when Street Fighter V was starting to pick up pace.
Now, keep in mind, this is one of the first crowdfunded games, and it got a lot of backing, and people just ate it up. You know, it was sort of like Tohu in that everybody just had their own mythologies, like to talk about, you know, and, you know, yeah, it still is going strong. So now Lab Zero Games is doing Indivisible, which is another cel-shaded game, but this one's not a fighting game.
Right. It's almost from the outset, it looks kind of like in a Metroidvania sort of action platformer. But when you get into when she comes across enemies, it turns into sort of, if people are familiar with the RPG Xenogears, it looks kind of like that when it comes to the combat, where you have like you basically have button presses that do a certain attack, and with certain characters in your toe, You can use your attacks, put them together, and build combos with your fellow characters. It's very stylish, it's very interesting, and it's got a lot of good art to it. Like even outside of the anime cutscene, it looks great when in the gameplay as well.
Scott,
well, I hadn't seen the gameplay yet, only that the intro anime, which did look cool. I loved Xenogears battle. Yeah, I see that now. The battle mechanics. I liked having different combinations to hit, and that sounds like fun. I mean, I miss that kind of action, so that'll look good. Yeah, this does look like a nice art style. It looks like it's Mesoamerica.
you're saying that. I want you to go watch some of the gameplay from Skullgirls now.
Okay.
It's just wacky. I mean, it's just, if you like that art style, you should see the other art style for
I did look at the
wacky.
I did look at the Skullgirls one to remind myself what it looked like. I hope this one's a bit more serious, but I guess I'll have to see.
Well, it looks more serious. I mean,
yeah, it does.
If you ever go to a Steam page, it now has a Steam page, and it does have a demo.
Okay, that's good. I was going to ask if this was side-scrolling or not, and yes. I can continue. Yeah, so that'll be cool. So I'm definitely interested to see more of this.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be cool to see how this comes out. I was kind of wondering what was going to... I saw the demo played maybe a year ago or more on Game Grumps, and I was blown away by it. I hadn't been part of the Kickstarter, but everything I've seen about this game, I do follow the people who made it, and every time they post some new art or new assets for it, it's mind blowing how well they know how to put their animation together with proper and tight gameplay.
And by the way, this is not a big team either. It's just a few people. And they worked on Skullgirls all by themselves too. It's like, you know, they know how to pump it out. I mean, it may be a labor and love in which they're willingly, you know, doing 80 hours a week just because they enjoy it so much.
Yeah. Where, like, I mean, if you saw how much went into Skullgirls over the time period that it was active, just like, these people clearly have the talent to put all of this together and make it work, even as such a small team as they are.
And also make it balanced. I mean, you already said it, you know, that Skullgirl is one of the best balanced fighting games out there.
Yes. And I want to see how that translates to their sort of past a demo worth of their RPG, because... Yeah. The biggest thing is just like making sure that an enemy, like, you want to provide challenge, but you don't want to make an enemy just like ridiculous to the point of like, I don't like, I guess to a point of like, this is so hard, I don't want to play the game anymore.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Monster Hunter World PC won't have mod support at launch. This is from the PC Gamer. Monster Hunter World is coming to PC next month, but seems unlikely to ship with mod support, according to producer
Tsushimoto. Don't worry about her name. Just say the developer.
Ryozo Tsushimoto. When asked if the game's Steam variation will come with mods, Samojo tells us, I probably did it wrong again, anyways, tells us we don't have anything to announce at this time. He also informs us that Monster Hunter World will not support cross-platform multiplayer at release. Speaking to the prospect
of... time for a stop there. You know, I've noticed those two last words there, at release, so that's sort of like hinting around that, yeah, at some point in the future, but not now.
My own commentary is that just because there's not mod support doesn't mean that people won't mod it anyways. I've seen them mod all sorts of games that weren't moddable, or at least didn't have...
Well, here's the thing. Official mod support is important in terms of, you know, you don't
it
have...
It is.
But the thing is that I can see where they don't want mod support for something like Monster Hunter World because it's such a specific type of game. You know, and it's also a multiplayer game. When you mod a multiplayer game, then you're starting to get into cheating.
Yeah. Yeah, because a lot of people are modding for more than just aesthetic reasons. They'll mod to do crazy-ass stuff.
Look,
just
I got 50 skins from this incredibly rare mod that I just happened to manage to pop up in front of me.
Yeah.
Okay, I had to go look and check and see if Final Fantasy... One thing that I'm seeing on my timeline more and more often is since Final Fantasy 15 released on PC, I see people do mods for that game, and I don't think it has mod support, but they do it anyways.
Well, you see, that's a single-player game, though. It's not, you know, whatever you want to do on your own time, fine, you know, but when you have a game that has co-op, you know, play, online co-op, you know, then it gets sketchy.
That there are people that still complain about other people with their single-player games and how they've modded them to play it the way they want to.
Oh, you want to talk about Chris Sawyer now? Mr. Don't Have Fun Chris Sawyer, who refused to have a free mode in Roller Coaster Tycoon because he wanted people to play his game his way. You have to play the scenarios. You can't do a sandbox mode. Screw sandbox modes for both Roller Coaster 1 and 2. And people had to mod it. And then he'd patch the game that ruined the mods. You know, sort of like he had a war between them and the modders on a single-player game.
I agree with
Jonah to some extent. When you start to get into the territory where you let people mod a multiplayer game, the first thing that they're going to do is mod exploitations for that multiplayer game. It is what it is. I don't care that much, but some people do.
Yeah, I mean, mods are great. I mean, the Long War mod revolutionized XCOM and it made Sid Meier and Firaxis sit up and take notice that what they did to XCOM to make it even more fun. I said, you know, we're going to incorporate some of those things into our upcoming game, you know? And then they hired them to do a Long War mod for XCOM 2.
Yeah.
And Rise of the Chosen is basically the Long War mod just made by them. And then we had to wait for another Long War mod for that expansion because the expansion made the original Long War mod unusable. You had to play it with regular XCOM 2. You couldn't play it with the expansion. So they came up with something that made it workable with the expansion too.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a case by case basis. Developer's going to do what developer's going to do, and it sucks because, you know, people have ideas. There are people out there that just jump straight into doing like resource cheat or automatic skins or automatic armor. But there are other people who just come up with cool creative ideas, and it's a shame that they don't get to put them somewhere.
And anyway, fuck Monster Hunter. I'll go with Dauntless.
Speaking to the prospect of simultaneous monster intros, cross platforms, events, and balance patches, Sugimoto says, I want to sync these up as much as possible, but as mentioned previously, regarding title updates, the differences in versions between platforms may prevent them from being completely...
Bullshit. But that's fine.
Well, Sony's not
so
playing...
So much bullshit. His eyes are turning even more brown. His sclera are turning brown. That's so much bullshit.
Balance patches will be case-by-case situation. If we find bugs that are happening only on PC, for example, or issues arising after a title update, then we would put patches out on each platform as soon as possible. If there was an issue common to all platforms, however, doing it piecemeal would be less preferable than fixing every version at the same time so that everyone has the same experience.
Yeah, but here's the thing. People aren't going to mod stuff to patch it. You know, they're going to mod stuff to... Put things into the game or change the game, stuff like that. You know, it's only after a game is no longer being supported that you see the fan made patches.
Yeah,
like KOTOR 2.
That's true. Because in Baldur's Gate they did fan made patches, but that was of course after the game was long since not supported officially anymore. So yeah, but I mean he does have a point that the mods would get in the way of trying to balance the game. I mean, they're not going to try to fix bugs that mods make, so they're going to try to keep the game from being modded, to keep those variables out of the equation when they're trying to balance
and work on
the
game.
They
wouldn't be patching the game for a modded version of the game. They'd be patching it for the vanilla. Who gives a shit about... With mods, it's at your own risk.
People turn in bug reports saying, oh, I used this mod and it created this issue. And they want to prevent that.
Then the response is, well, you're using a friggin' mod. Yeah. You know, you use mods at your own risk.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always been kind of an understood thing about mods, is that if you mod your game, you're risking ruining your save files or whatever, which is why every modder always says, create a save before you do this.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, the ones worth their salt anyways, and I've seen a lot of them. But
for some reason, I'm thinking about Hunt Down the Freeman now. We gotta do a game review of Hunt Down the Freeman.
This is a game a lot of people have been wanting on PC for a long, 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 long time. And when it comes down to it, they'll enjoy it. The people that care will enjoy it. And if anything, I think that it's gonna be more easily playable on PC than it's ever been on console, because Jonah, you know full well, the controls are completely unintuitive.
Yeah, here's the thing. What if they fuck up mouse and keyboard somehow? And they don't... You know what games really piss me off the most? The ones that don't allow you to do keyboard mapping. You know, it's like, why? Why won't you let me map my keyboard? Is there something wrong with me wanting to decide what keys do what?
I think they just didn't think of that being needed. That seems very amateurish.
Yeah, I'm still going with Dauntless. It isn't just the combat that's screwed up about Monster Hunter. It's just the way the game plays. I would have preferred it if it was more like Cabela's hunting with monsters, you know? Just don't tell us what to do. Let us just plop us out in the world and say, okay, have fun. You want to make a sword? Well, you better start looking for metal.
People are going to enjoy it. They will.
Yeah, that's fine. By the way, what wasn't another Monster Hunter World news is that the PC release date was announced. So it does
have August 9th.
Yeah, it has a definitive release date now, which isn't too far away. It's actually a month from now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
from this day on the day of recording.
Yeah, we're going to... The last item is not a video game news, sort of, kind of. Actually, you know, it does have a lot of effect on video games, though. Marvel Comics legend and Spider-Man co-creator Steve Ditko found dead at 90. And this comes to us from Ars Technica. New York police confirmed to the Hollywood Reporter on Friday that one of Marvel Comics' legendary staffers, Steve Ditko, was found dead in his apartment this week. Ditko was 90. the creator of Doctor Strange and the original artist, plus quote-unquote co-creator, according to Stan Lee, for Spider-Man was found days earlier on June 29th and told police that and police told THR they believed he had been dead for 2 days when he was found. Ugh. You know what that means, don't you? The neighbors had to report a smell coming from his apartment, I'm pretty sure.
Ugh.
A report indicate that Ditko left behind no family members or survivors. Ditko's impact on Marvel Comics may only be rivaled by his reclusive nature in later years. After creating and developing Spider-Man with Stan Lee in 1961, Ditko premiered Lasting Heroes, Doctor Strange. Ditko premiered Lasting Hero, Doctor Strange in 1963. And Ditko would continue to write and draw Doctor Strange stories for Marvel until 1966. Disputes over money and friction with Lee reportedly drove Ditko to leave Marvel in 66, and he shunned the public spotlight shortly thereafter. He gave his last formal interview in 1968, although he continued contributing comics to other publishers. Most notably, we'll get to that. In 2001, Ditko offered the following vague explanation for his Marvel Comics departure. I know why I left Marvel, but no one else in this universe knew or knows why. It may be of a mild interest to realize that Stan Lee chose not to know or hear why I left. This came after Ditko had resumed freelance work for Marvel Comics, most notably his 1991 creation of Squirrel Girl. Ditko participated in a BBC documentary about his life in 2007, but asked he not be filmed or recorded during his 25-minute chat with writer Neil Gaiman. The first rule of Steve Ditko is, we can't share Steve Ditko with you, the BBC commenter Jonathan Ross said at the time. One thing they didn't talk about, because this is a Hollywood Reporter and Ars Technica, is that he worked for a long time at Charleston Comics, where he created people like the Blue Beetle and the Question and Captain Atom. All of were purchased by DC Comics, and then Alan Moore took those characters and made versions of them called Rorschach and Night Owl and all that stuff, and made The Watchmen, which was basically his middle finger to Steve Ditko. Because here's the thing about Steve Ditko. He was severely Ayn Randian, very much an objectivist. As a matter of fact, famously, he had Spider-Man shaking his fist at protesters, and Stan Lee put in the dialogue box that he was supporting the protesters, because Ditko hated Vietnam War protesters and all that stuff. Which is probably why he left Marvel, by the way.
So I guess I'll ask, what's your take on Steve Ditko, Jonah?
He was J.D. Salinger. Or actually more like H.P. Lovecraft. One of these guys who are supremely creepy and just hide themselves away and are afraid of everything and have weird philosophies. But he was an incredible artist. He was probably the best person ever to do a hand on comic book characters. You know, do their hands. Because you watch comic books, you read comic books, you know, hands are really hard to do. Mm-hmm. He did them perfectly.
Yeah, I've seen a ton of Steve Ditko art throughout my lifetime, and he has a way of adapting to whatever situation he needed to draw for.
You know who I'm going to compare him to in terms of pure artwork? I'm going to compare him to Kurt Swan. Kurt Swan, if you don't know, is a person who did the classic Superman from the Silver Age. He knows how to make things expressive, and he's excellent with anatomy, like I just mentioned, with hands, you know. But he also, you know, he was the anti-Rob Liefeld. Rob Liefeld could create dozens and dozens of characters. They'd all be the same. Steve Ditko knew how to make individual characters and, you know, and a lot of them without making them all the same. Like Wolverine ripoff number 33 or...
I didn't have any idea that he created Squirrel Girl, which is just completely so weirdly different from everything else.
Well, like he was great at creating characters. His philosophy was, you know, like I said, in terms of he was more like H.P. Lovecraft in terms of that.
Right, and I listen to what you describe as him, and I look at and I think of what And I think of exactly what I know of Squirrel Girl, and I was like, that sounds like the complete opposite of him. So he was at least good at stepping outside of himself and making something interesting.
You know, he was sort of like saying, here, his Squirrel Girl was basically a joke character. And she still is a joke character, even though she can beat anybody. but it's sort of like a comic book parody. So I think when you do parodies, it's easier to do. I mean, here's the thing. He did create the Blue Beetle, who is the best character from Charlton Comics. I know the question was more of his style, you know, where it was extremely Randian. You know, this is right, this is wrong, never the tween shall meet. There's only good, there's only evil, and there's no gray area ever. You know, and that was the way it was with the question. Also, with some of his third-party work, and I'm not even talking about Charlton, I mean the smaller things, he had one character was A for A, which is basically referencing Atlas Shrugged.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But like I said, Ditko was an amazing artist. He knew how to draw characters. And like I said, you know, the best hands you'll ever see in any character. You watch Spider-Man hands these days, it's like they're either too small, too spindly, or too large. You know, I know it's something weird to be focusing on, but sometimes you'll just notice it in comics. Like Rob Liefeld and his feet.
It just seems disproportioned for whatever reason.
Yeah. So, so connecting this, you know, with video games, we do have a new Spider-Man game coming out. And I wonder if that game's going to have a little bit of a tribute to Steve Ditko now.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a good point. I wonder if they'll add the suit, the Spidey suit, where he has the webbing underneath his armpits specifically for that purpose.
Yeah.
Is that supposed to help him glide to the air better or something?
Oh, that was Spider-Man 2099, wasn't it? The little web air foils.
I was thinking of like some early like 1950s stuff.
Oh yeah, it was just you know, a cosmetic.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, if you see the classic cover of the first Spider-Man, you know, Amazing Fantasy number 15, you'll see them underneath his armpits.
Yeah, I think I remember. I just never really thought about the why. Why was it like that?
I remember that everybody said that Spider-Man wouldn't work. Because A, no one likes bugs. B, no one wants to see the adventures of a teenager who's moody and depressed. You know, except they fail to understand that a lot of comic book readers are moody, depressed teenagers. Or, you know how preteens idolize high school students because they have these fantasies about what high school is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually ends up in their minds to be something like Saved by the Bell. It ends up being a drudgery of walking down a hallway with a lot of lockers on either side. And you're not gonna be able to be like the Power Rangers and do you know, motorbike races and and all these charities. Anyways.
So who would you say is your favorite, like, this might be an easy question for some of us, but who would you say is your favorite Ditko character?
Blue Beetle.
Blue Beetle?
Yep, I guess mine would be Doctor Strange.
Hmm.
For me, it's the question, and it comes from a very specific point in comic book history.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Is it Ditko's question or the question that came afterward? Because here's the thing. Rob Liefeld, quote-unquote, created Deadpool, but he only created a Deathstroke ripoff. I know his last name is Kelly. Joe Kelly. It was Joe Kelly who made Deadpool the way we know him.
Based upon what you said, I have no doubt that it was somebody else writing the question at this point.
No face.
Right.
Just the writing face.
Yeah, but I like specifically one of my favorite and top moments in comic book history is there is a point where the question reads a Watchmen comic and thinks Rorschach is a badass and tries to emulate him and be more hard boiled, and he gets his ass kicked and quickly decides that Rorschach sucks.
Yeah, here's the thing about Rorschach. He's not a hero. He's a broken, homophobic, racist, little turd of a guy who is an idiot, who is a raving lunatic, and there's nothing good about him. That's how Alan Moore wrote him. And what happens is, comic fans who like Darkman think he's supposed to be an anti-hero. No, he's not a hero. He's just not even a villain. He's a nothing.
Right. And
he's
a broken
man.
I think that, like, just like that. I mean, you mentioned earlier,
who posts the dead Watchmen version of Breitbart.
And I mean, you mentioned it earlier. Alan Moore created those characters as sort of like a big middle finger to Ditko, yeah. And then that came back as like that moment comes back as like a big old double middle finger back to him. It's like,
you know, the thing is that now here's the thing: Alan Moore wanted to use the Blue Beetle and Captain Atom as they were, right? Not Rorschach, et cetera, or Ozymandias and DC. No. We have plans for these characters. Don't ruin these characters for us. You can turn them into XPs of the, you can turn them into versions of these characters, but don't use the actual versions because we're doing Crisis on Infinite Earths, and we'd like to have Blue Beetle and Captain Atom and The Question all join us. It would be like taking Shazam and turning him into Black Adam, you know, an unredeemable Black Adam. It's like, oh, you want to, now all people are going to know as Captain Marvel as an asshole. We don't want that. Not until the new 52, anyway.
Yeah. So, do you have any particular points of like your favorite character, whether through Ditko or through another medium, that come across to mind?
What do you mean?
Like, what's your favorite? For me, the unequivocal best, one of my favorite comic book moments in history is the big old double FU to Rorschach from Question.
Oh, but you see, that was an FU to Steve Ditko.
No. I'm talking about
my favorite moment would have to be, you know, and it's going to be obvious, the origin story of Spider-Man, which perfectly set up the character, you know, the entire with great power comes great responsibility sort of thing, you know. You know, the entire thing of, oh, he let this robber go by because I don't give a shit. And, oh, guess what? That robber happened to kill your favorite uncle, who liked to wrestle with you, by the way. Some of that dialogue was strange. Just having Uncle Ben tell him, oh, I won't be able to wrestle you anymore. Uncle Ben, you were wrestling with Peter? Really? That's kind of weird. Not as weird as Trouble, though. Do you know the Trouble miniseries?
Yes.
For those who don't know, that was something by Mike Millar, who decided to make a romance story in which Peter Parker's parents and Aunt May and Uncle Ben, as teenagers, go to a resort, and Uncle Ben ends up fucking, no, I'm sorry, his father ends up fucking Aunt May, and Aunt May gives birth to him, so Aunt May is actually his mother.
Why would they do that?
It was an imaginary story anyway, but it was icky.
Yeah.
But it was written like one of those romance comics from the 70s and 60s. So, for cringeworthy laughs, it's a good read. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I also forgot to mention that Tab Hunter passed away today. For those who don't know who Tab Hunter was, he was a blonde Western stud who later went on to do John Waters films.
Hmm.
So if you want to watch a good John, watch Polyester and Lust in the Dust for funny Tab Hunter. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shark.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, play games, be cool, y'all.